Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
And my name's Dylan. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm a physicist in Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring the Kappa.
The Kappa is typically described as a child-sized fey being resembling a humanoid turtle. They have a powerful beak on a head of thin, wiry hair lining an indentation in the skull roof, which holds a pool of water. This pool on top of the Kappa's head is sometimes regarded as the source of a Kappa's supposed mystical powers.
We are joined by Kappa. Kappa is a professional performer, GM, voice actor, and personality in the TTRPG space. He is also one of the people behind Friends Who Roll Dice, the TTRPG group who are all about uplifting BIMPOC, LGBTQIA, disabled, and other marginalized communities through actual play productions, product highlights, and charity events. He is also one of the hosts and producers of 2B Movie Podcast. You can find him on Twitter at TheKappaChris for all of his upcoming projects. Welcome to the show, Kappa.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Kappa. What is the Kappa?
So the Kappa.
Incredibly handsome streamer. It's a cool podcast.
No, please.
Great hair.
Voice like silk.
That is a Kappa. what we're talking about is the Kappa. The Japanese people describe it as a cryptid. It's like a river spirit, a fairy tale creature. In our frame, in our lens that we're approaching it today, it's mythical. It's mysterious. Has all of these characteristics that don't follow the normal rules of animals and people. It's this weird mix of familiar and unfamiliar, this trickster, this almost chivalrous at times, mixed into one. It's weird. A lot of people...
It's an odd one.
Yeah. A lot of people draw different imagery from when they hear the word Kappa or Kappa.
The... Very, very limited context I have for the Kappa is, I believe, an episode of Arthur.
A lot of people draw it from Arthur. And honestly, they got the main strokes, the broad strokes of the Kappa pretty accurate.
Gives it a little bit more of a troll under the bridge vibe, but
a little bit, yeah. And that's how a lot of people in Japan, a lot of people growing up with these sort of folk tales and fairy tales, understand it to be. It has definitely changed over time, but it is still prevalent. People still understand it as the troll, the river troll, or the nymph, or if you will, like you said, it's a weird one. Like child-sized, maybe like 6 or 7 year old child, has a turtle shell back, powerful beak, and the most distinctive part is that bowl or hole or receptacle of water at the top of its head.
The most commonly referenced distinctive part, I feel like we'll get into the definitive most distinctive part later.
Is there a core story or a very popular story that you would consider the most well understood story of the Kappa?
It's not like the big bad wolf. There's no like cautionary tale, or it's more of like, don't go swimming in that river because there is a monster out there that's out to get you. Children will often go out and play in ponds, streams, rivers, lakes, whatever, any sort of body of water, and their guardian, parent, or someone will be like, hey, be careful, watch yourself, or don't play around in that because, you know, it's dangerous. And, you know, as children, you don't understand danger, but you do understand what you're scared of. And so they tell, you know, that this kappa, this reptilian child, is going to eat your flesh.
I do really like the idea that all of our mystical tales really just end with parents desperate to keep their kids in line for a few hours so they can catch a break.
Can you just not fucking go over there for 20 goddamn minutes?
There's a dragon, whatever. It's mean, it'll eat you, it likes to eat kids. Don't go in that wood.
But the kid's like, no, I don't care about you. I want to have fun. But if you tell them, this turtle thing is down there, they're going to think twice.
It's harder nowadays. It's hard for suburbs parents to be all, you know, there's a troll in the pool. Don't go around when mom and dad aren't here.
When you're a child, you get a sense of like, I'm supposed to be scared of this, but you don't understand why. And so you are scared of it. And the most terrifying part is because you don't know why. And then when you're an adult, you understand.
Right.
You start
because as a kid, you end up filling in so many more blanks as a kid. I think that's why things are more frightening, because you invent so much in your own head. Like when you're shown the monster in a movie, it immediately stops being frightening. Mm-hmm. It's when you're imagining it that it's really scary. So as a kid, you're inventing so much more because you don't understand. Maybe that's why things seem so much bigger and more frightening.
Yeah.
But I think that might be kind of the reverse of what happens here. Because when you're talking about sort of the origins of the Kappa story, it is that. It is the don't go out on the ice story. And you don't have to give any details. Why? There's a monster out there. What is it? I don't know. It's like 3 foot tall, looks like a turtle. It'll fuck you up. Don't go out there. But then when you're an adult, or like when you're a teenager and you start hearing that story and you start thinking like, well, why must it be scary? And then you've seen like a snapping turtle or something once. Well, it's got to be like these terrifying fucking jaws. Maybe it's magic, and you start building out the mythology of like why it is scary. And then by the time you're an adult, it's a monster now.
With a built-in escape mechanism.
Yep.
If you're smart, you can get away.
Yeah, if you know about it, it's like, okay, I don't want to be scared. I don't want to encounter this thing. But hey, I've been told there's this one thing you can do if you come into this thing. So just remember that. You got to keep your wits about you. You got to be alert. You got to be aware, which is honestly what we want children to be doing when they're out exploring and being children, you know?
Look for the specific thing so they're paying attention. Yeah.
Look for the glowing red weak point.
When the kappa tips over and the water in the bowl in its head falls out, it's paralyzed, it's stuck, and it's helpless. And that gives you the chance to get out of there. They make it more whimsical and children, you know, the filter it for children in the thing. But when you hear about this kind of thing in the folk tales and in the stories, it's like, that's your one chance. Get out of there, you know, or else it will come at you. It will grapple you, or, you know, it might be a little bit more playful, but you don't want to take that chance.
So that's something I always find interesting in
like D&D versions of the monsters is mm-hmm. like the two cases that come to mind are like, if you fight a zombie in fiction in general, you have to behead it. You got to smash the head. That's the only way it dies. If you're fighting a vampire, you got to stake the son of a bitch. Those are the rules. Like, it doesn't matter how many times you stab it with the sword. That's how you do it. D&D is terrible at handling specific weaknesses. They always wind up either way too powerful. Like, I don't know if you've checked the vampire stat block. If you can push that guy into a river, he's done. Like, that's it. Or you hit the other end of it where, like, there are no rules for cutting off the head of a zombie.
And that's Dungeons and Dragons. But like the zombie that we understand in media today is like, okay, you destroy the brain, or, you know, and you're good, you're safe. Dungeons and Dragons doesn't have that. And we are forced to reframe.
There's a lot of homebrew rules for called shots, like add plus +5 to the DC, you have disadvantage. There's ways to just toss them in, but they don't feel satisfying. It doesn't. No. There needs to be some sort of mechanism specifically designed to target things. And it works nicely. Like, if you're fighting something that is too big for you to take down through very, very careful, coordinated work, you should be able to figure out a way to do it. There should be mechanisms to let you be greater than the sum of your parts, but it never really plays out that way.
Even just giving the fighter a moment to feel clever, because typically I think Battlemaster is the only person in the party that is going to have a way to make something fall prone. There's a couple other abilities smattered throughout the game, but like the most common way to do it is the trip with the Battlemaster. Aside from that, like, you do actually have to now go outside the rules and be clever. Nobody has a thing in combat where you can just really pull a lever and be like, well, I knock it over so the water falls out of its head.
There's also like spells like shape water, or, you know, move.
Clever. I like that.
What if you freeze it? Does that count? Like,
you have to build in the rules of D&D, you have to build in like, oh, this water is immune to magical effect or something.
Right.
You know,
otherwise it's too easy. You can just be like, it's done. A mage hand. And we could just like, you know, splash it out and we're done. Hell, I can carry 5 pounds of paper towels. We'll have this cleaned up in no time.
Well, because I really actually like the idea of it not being immune to water.
Okay.
And that being part of why Kappa tend to be near villages in the material.
Mm-hmm.
Fae-like. Obviously, they are Japanese, and the concept of fairy doesn't 100% translate, but...
Yeah, the concept of fae is probably most akin to the kami. The suite of spirits that inhabit and animate. It's basically animism, this concept where every piece of nature, every living thing has some sort of avatar tied to it.
The best we're going to do is they should be in the Feywild. But if the only time they're threatening is when there's water in their head and it's something that you can kind of knock out like with trivial magic, they're going to leave the Feywild because, no, I'm not hanging out with the elves anymore. This is bullshit. I'm going to go over here where the farmers are, and I'm the king of the castle.
If they're hanging near a river, the idea is probably they don't go too far because they want to get you back in the river so they can overpower you and drown you, much like a crocodile.
It's their home turf, you know?
Yeah. And once you're in the water, that trick goes away. You can't knock it out. Even if you do, they're just going to fall in the water, immediately have water in their head again, and they'll be fine. And they're coming after you.
Particularly for this kind of thing where it's like it neutralizes its powers or something like that,
mm-hmm.
where you could make a kappa be incredibly difficult to kill. You could make it hugely powerful. But then it's just a matter of like, oh no, but you knock the water out of its head. So now it's basically an ugly little boy.
There are so many sources. People have like regional differences of what the kappa's abilities are and what they can do and how to defeat them and all that stuff. But in all of my findings, and I could be wrong about this, but I did research this pretty extensively, was there's no record of anyone ever killing one. You know, like in any story or any like, in any like legend, no one ever kills one. they just kind of have it tip over, or they run away, or the person is a cautionary tale and sacrifice someone else to this as they ran away.
Just got to be faster than your slowest friend.
Yeah, faster than the slowest person. That's all you need. We get to this thing where we can make the kappa really, really powerful in the sense that it can't ever, you know, die. It just kind of needs to return back to where, back whence it came, or back to the Feywild, or disappears after a while. You know, we don't really get a sense of, we don't really have any instances of it dying. So it's hard to say how much, like, if we're building it out in Dungeons & Dragons, how much HP it actually has.
Let's get to the other question there then. Is the kappa a monster?
I honestly don't think so, because the concept of monster for me implies doing evil for the sake of doing evil. But everything that's scary about the kappa is that it eats folks, that there's one thing we haven't gone to yet, but it basically eats folks, it eats livestock, it ruins crops and everything. But that's really the kappa just trying to survive and sustain itself. And, you know, it's unfortunate that there's some there that part of its diet is in particular horse meat or human flesh. But honestly, like, can we fault that? You know, you wouldn't call a crocodile a monster.
Yeah.
Right? It's just an animal. It's just trying to live.
I like that it's horse meat or human flesh.
Yeah.
Implying that we taste the same to it. But yeah, it's a pest, Dylan. You're right. It's not evil. We just view it as evil because it's trying to eat us. And we would view anything that's trying to eat us as probably a little evil.
Yeah.
But subjectively, you could say that they're little monsters, you know, like the way, you know, a mischievous child is a monster, always wrecking stuff because it's fun.
Right.
In a lot of the folk tales, the kappa has been described to be mischievous, like pulling pranks, and sometimes, because they don't understand, because they're otherworldly, they don't necessarily understand the humor of humans. And so you could go too far with a joke, you know, or a prank, and the kappa would find it funny, but not understand that you actually caused harm to someone, you know?
Yeah. It is the interesting bit of what you effectively have is something the size of a child that lives in water. So one of the ways that it could be a threat is just that whole thing of you don't let your kids go near it because maybe it's just straight up playful, but it's amphibious and does not have context for human breathing. It's very easy to accidentally drown someone at that point, and now it's a monster.
And a little misunderstanding goes a long way when it comes to, you know, us as humans. We misinterpret things all the time because from our own perspective, they did something bad. We don't necessarily understand or have the capacity to investigate the context of these actions. And so automatically, this is a pest. This is malicious.
Yeah, we're not good at the negotiation stage. We're really good at the pitchfork and torches stage.
So I don't think the kappa is a monster. I think it does monstrous things.
I think we could safely class it as a problem.
Yeah.
You got a kappa around, like, that's not great.
No one's ever happy to hear it, right? It's like, but, oh, like, you got a kappa. Oh, yay. No, it's always like, oh, we have a kappa. Damn it. Just stay away from that whole bend in the river. Just leave it be.
We're going to build a new bridge. It's going to be fine.
Right. And if you come across a kappa, just get it to bow. You know, it will tip over, and that will give you just that instant to walk away. Or here's another thing. Bring some cucumbers with you. Because for some reason, alongside the horse meat, the human flesh, the kappa's favorite food is cucumbers. I don't know where it came from, but it's so prevalent that the word for a sushi roll with only cucumber in it is kappa maki.
Huh.
Oh no, it's kappa roll, but the word for cucumber is, I believe it's cutie. I could be wrong about that, but it's just not kappa. So the cucumber roll is named after the
thing who eats cucumbers.
Yeah.
It's like that's how well known it is, that it's so well associated they replace the word. Well, that seems easier to carry cucumbers than like pass up your horse. Like, yeah. You know, always have four or five cucumbers. That seems fair.
Kappa, You want to tell me about the other way to defeat a kappa?
We've learned a few things about the kappa and its, you know, dietary needs. Horse meat, human flesh, cucumbers.
Straightforward.
The thing that it loves the most is this thing called the Shirikodama, which is effectively we understand as the human soul. The human soul is located center of mass, you know, 2 inches down from your navel, 2 inches in. But the way to access it is through your butt. The word Shirikodama literally translates to butt ball. It's this little fleshy ball that contains the soul, and it is the kappa accesses it through your rectal cavity.
So the soul is in the prostate.
The soul is the prostate.
The soul is, wow. Okay.
I don't know where that came from. I can't find the source. It has just been prevalent throughout all of the kappa's history that the butt ball is its favorite food.
It's the caviar of people.
There are all these stories. It's pretty standard. Like, don't let it eat you. You know, it might, like, it's in the water, so you could wind up drowning. Like, all of these reasonable stories. And then also, sometimes it'll try to get your soul out your ass. So watch out for that.
Yeah. Is it satisfied after that?
Well, I mean, I don't think it really matters, because if someone were to tear your soul out your ass and eat it, you're probably having a bad time. And whether it's done or not, you are.
Is this idea of the butt ball?
The butt ball.
to use a technical term. Is this idea of the butt ball soul prevalent in other stories besides the kappa? Or is this just here?
I won't get into it too much, because it is featured in other parts of Japanese beliefs, you know, ancient Japanese beliefs and lore and whatnot. So short answer, yes, but as it pertains to the kappa, kappa is the only thing that actually will try to access it.
Okay.
To put it clinically.
Sure.
Yeah. People will refer to the Shirikodama as, you know, the human soul and an essential part of your identity and your biology and yourself. You don't want to lose this thing.
Right.
Which makes the kappa just that a little bit more terrifying in that sense.
What happens if you do lose it? Are there characters in the stories who do?
I've only found that people who have experienced losing their Shirikodama to a kappa experience this weird bliss. It's this weird paralyzing bliss. Like, you no longer exist as a person. You are just this vessel of pure happiness, but you're brain dead in that sense. Like, you yourself, if you were to lose your Shirikodama to a kappa, are basically brain dead. But you feel fine.
All your wants and desires live in your soul. So when you're without your soul, you by definition have all of you're completely fulfilled.
You can just exist.
You are one. You're one with nature. However,
you aren't fucking in there anymore.
Right, because you don't want anything else.
Yeah.
This leads us to the final weakness I wanted to bring up, because it was just such an odd thing to see, like, reference. Obviously, the kappa is coming after your soul.
Yes.
Which means it's specifically going after your ass. The last way you can repel, in a desperate situation, a kappa, mm-hmm. is they fucking hate it when you fart on them.
So, yes.
Which is fair. I'm not going to dissent from that, but the fact that it was worth adding into the literature, like, and also, you know, if you got one chambered.
The last line of defense, that you threw your cucumber too far, you couldn't get it to bow, it's there, it's, yeah, you just let one go. This particular fact about the kappa references a woodblock art of someone who is releasing a stream of gas into the face of a kappa, and it looks like the kappa is doesn't like it very much. However, just like how in modern times we have art that is meant to be absurd and ridiculous and, you know, basically memes, I think, I honestly think that this woodblock was a meme.
Right.
Back in Edo era Japan. It's hard to interpret because there was never any, like, description to it or anything. People have interpreted it as that's what the soul taking looks like. Like it leaves this stream of wispy material as it takes your butt ball, or it could be the last line of defense for anyone whose butt ball is about to be stolen.
It's a weakness that rests on tenuous information. So like, don't bank on it. This isn't like if you're going to cross the river and you feel like you're at risk, you make sure that you have some cabbage in you and then you're going to be fine.
Right.
You don't rely on it. Which for the record, and I'll turn this back to something more serious, I do love that as a thing to do in D&D. If someone botches a knowledge check, lying to your players is great because usually they'll get on board with something like that. You can specifically tell them, like, don't lie to your players just outright because that feels shitty. But if somebody really screws up their knowledge roll and you just tell them like, yeah, no, Strahd is terrified of garlic. Vampires hate garlic.
Yes.
Yes. You're left throwing cloves at a fucking CR12 monster. And they're like, what the fuck is this?
Strahd's just standing there, looks to his lieutenant. They're doing garlic. Can you believe they're doing garlic? I haven't seen garlic. Let's play along. Oh, garlic.
Listen, play dead, and then we'll collect the garlic later, and then we'll make this very delicious, delicious.
It's so hard to get garlic. I don't know why they got so much.
There's your new bit of world building. Barovian soil, bad for garlic specifically.
All that low-level smog just smothers it. It doesn't stand a chance.
Shallots are fine, though, so if you need an allium, it's going to work out. But yeah, no, doing stuff like that with your players is always fun, and a lot of players will lean into it, where if you just tell them, like, all right, so you botched this check, obviously did a bad job, so here's what you absolutely definitely know to be true about the enemy you're coming up against.
This feature of the Kappa definitely is some older brother telling like a younger sibling, dude, just fart, man. Like, yeah. Like last resort, just let it rip.
I heard John farted on a Kappa and he was fine. Yeah. Anytime you see a snapping turtle, like out of the corner of your, oh God, like it's going to build. And the more you believe in it, the scarier it's going to be. And everyone's going to be seeing Kappas all over. Yeah, it would work. It might even work nowadays. If we, you know, if children went outside, we haven't paved everything. It may have worked.
Honestly, that would be a great way to build in that myth is that, again, I'm putting a little bit of a Western interpretation on concepts, but kami are sort of nature gods, tiny little nature gods.
Yeah.
So if you have a story like that where you've told someone about a kappa just as a way to keep them out of the river, and then they keep seeing a snapping turtle in there and the kids keep seeing it and they build this idea up like, oh no, there's a monster in there. Like, why is it only the size of a kid? Because that's the size kids think things should be. It's just you've managed to believe in the river monster so hard that the spirit of the river looks like a turtle now.
Yeah, I think over generations you build up this identity and it starts to mimic real life. Nowadays, the modern version of the Kappa as mascots for sustainability practices and environmentalism. It's like, oh, we want to clean up the river. Here's the Kappa to sing you a song about cleaning up the river, you know. Or
you don't want the river to be filthy. The Kappa will get sad.
Yeah, look how cute this thing is. And so it is starting to evolve from like a snapping turtle beak to like a cute little duck beak.
It's becoming more of a guardian.
Yeah.
But a guardian seems to be like that's working with humanity as opposed to trying to eat them.
Yeah, yeah.
Still going after horses though. Fuck horses.
Yeah, fuck those horses.
Horses? Mm-mm. Kappa still don't like that.
So we got to do a permutation on this one. Because there is not a Kappa in 5th edition.
Yeah.
What are the important things that a Kappa needs to have mechanically to be recognizable as the monster?
I mean, there's so much already like extremely unique about the Kappa. You can, first of all, like the head bowl thing. We talked about rules. This is like the one rule that is unique to the Kappa. A bowl filled with water on its head. It's when emptied, causes it, you know, either to go prone or paralyzed or weak or something in the in terms of fifth edition. I honestly think that having it be amphibious is really important, and giving it that mobility or strength, that home field advantage in the water, because there's no reason why people would warn against going into the river or other bodies of water if there wasn't some inherent danger or skill attributed to the kappa in the water.
It definitely sounds like it should have like advantage on grappling checks, seeing as that's what it does while it's in the water. Yeah. And also the thing that's so neat about this monster is that your players probably haven't heard of it.
Yes.
And your characters certainly probably haven't heard of it. So that when you spring it on them for the first time, they can accidentally figure out that knocking the water out of the bowl paralyzes it. And that will be a really fun moment for them.
The other thing that I think really hammers home the identity of the kappa that should make it onto a stat block is its affinity for humor and mischief. And like I said, that could be taken too far when interacting with your more normal human citizens or villagers or what have you. But there's also this sense of innocence and chivalry tied to that. It's just that because they're in, for a lack of a better term for Dungeons & Dragons, because they're fey or in real life kami, they just don't have that understanding of mortal customs.
But they're very adherent to their own.
Yeah. And the last thing, probably the Shiri Kodama. Like, there's like...
You gotta.
From my own experience, I don't know of any other kami or creature that specifically accesses the Shiri Kodama as prevalent, as much as the kappa.
You're going to have a table that A, you trust, and B, has a level of maturity.
No, but that's the thing, is you always have to, for any of these monsters, we have to make an adjustment. Because, as I mentioned, like, D&D doesn't handle specifics well, and the whole idea of the monster targets your butt clearly should not make it into the text.
I can't see how that wouldn't go wrong. Yeah. In general, at an average D&D table, it's going to go wrong, and then it's going to get homophobic, and it's just, yeah, it doesn't feel like the best option. I can understand why it hasn't found its way into a monster manual yet.
But the thing you could do, make it a conditional grapple attack. Like, if it has the target grappled, it can start to try to yank out your soul. And now you've got like, okay, that...
Yeah, you just flavor the text a bit.
The fact that the soul is going to be physically like embodied at that point, that it will take it, also gives you a whole bunch of cool stuff where I think if it takes the soul of a party member, you would do one of those, like, if it makes this attack and you drop to 0 hit points, you cannot be revived unless the soul is in the caster's possession.
You gotta go get it back.
It's one of those fun things where, like, you fight the same kappa twice, but if you fight them the first time, they think it's a joke and they're playing, and it never comes up. And then, you know, you come back, something's gone wrong, and you're like, well, I guess we have to kill this thing. And it realizes that, oh, I'm defending myself now.
And all of these elements, I think, make for very strong characterization. And as we've seen already, really good story avenues, you know, narrative avenues of how you can go about utilizing all of these different rules with the kappa. Terms of engagement, and follow-up, and again, characterization makes it really easy for whoever's running the game, your game master, to play around with. Maybe it's more mischievous, maybe it is more chivalrous or honorable, you know, different mixes of the thing, but then it's still inherently a kappa.
And because they always come back, it plays kind of like the Aboleth, where as long as the river is there, the spirit of the river will always come back. So no matter what you do, as long as the river itself is not destroyed,
yeah,
that kappa will always be there.
Which also creates like just the lovely thing where you run the monster at first or second level, they handle it and they realize like, oh, it's not evil, it's just kind of a dickhead. Yeah. But like, as long as we're cool with it,
right,
like, toss it a cucumber, whatever, everything's good. And you come back 5 levels later and there's a bunch of people crossing the bridge. The kappa comes out of the river and they bow, and the kappa goes to bow, and you see the civilians going, no, don't,
please don't.
It's okay. Look, cucumber, I was just saying hi. Good to see you, man. Bye. Have a great day.
And I think that's the Shinto idea of animism really builds in the Japanese culture of respecting your surroundings and respecting your environment. It makes it so that people nowadays have this more environmental consciousness in the Japanese culture. If we tie that into this idea, this mythical idea of the kappa, if the kappa gets defeated or run out or removed from its environment, the environment suffers because it is inherently tied to this river spirit. Without the river spirit, the river doesn't exist because they're so closely tied to each
other. You just pulled out the Shirikodama of the river.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
We just did the unicorn episode. It almost feels like what the unicorn is, which is a representation placed down to protect something. It's more direct. It's more like it was assigned here by another spirit and therefore now protects that area. It kind of sounds like the kappas arise out of these areas, that the areas themselves just kind of form them.
Yeah, it becomes this thing of you go back, which came first, the kappa or the river? Or
right.
And it's when you play that game, it's hard to remove one or the other. The river is the kappa, or the kappa is the river. That belief is shared by a lot of Shinto practitioners, or was shared by a lot of Shinto practitioners. And we do see it still prevalent in a lot of Japanese folktales today. And not just with the kappa. I'm talking with like the tengu and the oni and other kami from Japan.
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan! Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean, moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff.
She's a bit clumsy.
Okay, so that makes sense. Sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled. Everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set. The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay. This better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
This part of the country is fairly idyllic. The rolling hills are just sort of starting to give way to a more flat plain. It's a nice area for farming, full of like smaller bodies of water, little glades and forests. It's one of the places where the Feywild seems to encroach, not just from like a planar sort of magical perspective, but it honestly almost looks like it's spilling over into the material plane here. Things are a step greener, a step clearer, just honestly a little nicer. It's very temperate. It's a very calm area. But we're going to focus in on one specific body of water. Kristen, tell me where you make your home.
Well, my home, the area that I spend most of my time playing, adventuring, is this river. It's pretty long, so I've got lots of room to play around in. There are fun features, like waterfalls of various sizes, various pools and collections of water. This is my playground. And bonus, people have started collecting, and so there's no shortage of people to play with, to mess around with.
This particular little nice little set of pools is a little out of the way in that it's like cordoned off a little bit by a little bit of a wooded area. This is the standard issue. Yes, I know it's faster. Listen to your father and I. Don't cut through that glade. No one listens. To the degree where there is the finest of paths running in like this little weaving serpentine between the pools and the ponds. But for the most part, you're left to your own devices and able to sort of go out and find people to play with. You know, folks who have set up under bridges, and like, it's great. You get to play with people all the time. But then there are just people there sometimes, and you don't want to deal with people.
No, yeah. It's really cramping my style.
You have to yourself this sort of nice, calm area. Aram, tell me how you're going to ruin it.
Well, Kevin, the famed ranger, well, not in these parts famed, but he will be soon, is riding his prized horse, Annabelle. Recently, he won Annabelle in a bit of gambling that he may or may not have cheated in, and had to ride Annabelle out of the last town rather quickly. But Annabelle is basically his meal ticket. She is a beautiful and highly prized horse, and he will be able to sell her for quite a lot of gold.
So tell me, when you were told by someone, because as was mentioned, you know, there is a level of like new settlement here. People are moving through this area fairly commonly. So you were probably riding alongside someone who told you when you took this random path, don't go down there. It's not safe.
Oh, what could be unsafe about it?
It's a story you've heard before. No, there are spirits down that way. You know, the Fae spill over into the area. You know, there's a demon that lives in the waters. There's probably owl bears. In fact, there was one person who just said, I don't know, Mom just said it was bad.
Well, you know, these folks living on the outskirts are spooked by just about anything, so I think I'll be okay.
Of course. And, you know, Kevin, the adventurer. And how could you not become famous and renowned with a name like Kevin? So exotic, so fancy.
Kevin Jones, the famed ranger.
After a little bit of riding, maybe like 10 minutes through this sort of bramble, you actually wind up having to get off your horse at a certain point. The path exists. You can see it, but you can't follow it. It's still a little overgrown. And you see this clearing onto these just beautiful little bodies of water. The path cuts almost through the middle. It veers a little bit off to one side because there's this relatively large pond dead center. Just tell me, are you sticking to the path? Are you hewing closer to the edges?
My favorite terrain is the forest. Do I feel at all like things might be getting, like things are changing? Are we getting more into an off-the-beaten-path kind of area?
You are enough off the main roads that this isn't really suitable territory for the horse.
Right.
You know, you've got to kind of walk alongside it. You've got to give it a little bit of time. And there are places you can see not too far ahead where, like, it's going to get muddy. And then the thing you've got to rely on is that these are effectively just puddles. Like, if those get really steep, the horse steps wrong, then it could be, like, straight into the water. Honestly, you're just kind of taking a gamble on how deep any given one of these is.
Walking carefully, leading them by the ropes. Okay. And I will just continue forward. I imagine there's going to be a river or something at some point, so because it's getting wet and muddy, so I'm looking for like a bridge or a crossing.
There is a person coming through here, and normally when people come through here, it's like kids or like kind of desperate folks running. They're in a hurry. This guy has taken his time, and he brought a horse. Seems aware of his surroundings to a degree that you're not particularly used to.
Yeah, no, this is definitely different from the farmers that drop produce, the kids that are playing in the water.
If there is anyone it is fun to surprise, it's the people who think that they know what's going to happen. So tell me, how do you want to deal with this guy?
I need to get this guy away from the horse. I need to separate the two so that, one, it's easier.
Get the upper hand, yeah.
Get the upper hand. I'm just going to really quickly, just a small call out just above the water and then dive back down.
Ram, I want you to roll me survival.
Natural 1 plus 5 is 6.
That is a game bird.
Just a bird.
When I say those are game bird, I mean them's good eating.
Oh, excellent. All right.
Like this is some sort of like larger duck native to the area. Something bordering on goose.
Pull my longbow off my back. Have an arrow half loaded. Still leading the horse. Right? Like I'm going to walk behind me, but I've let go of the reins now and I'm holding the bow and I'm searching now. So I'm going to invoke primeval awareness. As an action, I can expend one ranger spell slot to sense whether any aberrations, celestials, dragons, elemental, fae fiends, or undead are present within a mile of you. Just to make sure this is a bird.
I'm going to let that natural one roll on a little bit if it's cool with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kami, I mean, obviously not strictly in any of those, but somewhere on the general paradigm of celestial to fey to fiend feels about right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's somewhere there.
You ping that they exist within a mile of you. But the trouble with primeval awareness is, does it tell you where they are?
Just that they're there.
Just that they exist within a mile of you. So, like, yeah, you're getting the general sense, but you're also, as I mentioned, in an area that's kind of close to the Feywild. So I think this would be in keeping with things you've seen before in this area, not a major deviation.
So nothing really jumps out as unusual.
Any perception checks you make, I was going to give you a disadvantage because you were looking for the wrong thing. You just demonstrated that you were very much aware of yourself, so we'll cancel that out. That sound fair?
Yep, absolutely. Then I will listen to try and hear the bird again, and I will look for a place where I can get a little bit of height.
Aram, I'm going to have you roll me perception.
All right.
Or I guess survival in this case, because you are hunting.
That is a 8 plus 5 is 13.
Kappa, correct me if I'm wrong, but Kappa are supposed to have some level of mimicry, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, really depends on how much they would like to do that. But generally, with the mischief comes the mockery, comes the imitation.
Basically, I'm asking, is this territory where you feel like you should be rolling some sort of deception, or do you think that's like, is that part of the stat block? Is this going to be like sort of the Kenku mimicry ability?
I can cast Prestidigitation. Is that one of the spells that I can do the?
You can do a bunch of fun things with Prestidigitation. You just can't say it well.
Instantaneous harmless sensory effect.
It's a cantrip, and I'm sure there's another cantrip that's mildly better suited to the goal, but like, we're not here to fight that much about rules.
Then I will cast Prestidigitation off in the opposite direction from where I am going. I'm just going to have it repeat somewhat faintly the noise that I just tried to make. And keep this person looking off in that direction.
Okay, then roll me a stealth with advantage against that 13.
Okay, that's 15 on the first one, 14 on the second. So stealth is going to be plus dex, yep. Right? So 17 total.
Kevin, the mighty hunter.
Yes.
Soon to be up there with Nimrod. You hear the bird again. Pulls your attention. And the kappa, perfectly, in a motion that is not from someone of the water, but someone who is the water itself, moves silently. There are ripples here and there, but no more than the reeds actually waving in the wind would imply anyway. So I don't think you necessarily, let's say, fell for it. You are on edge, but I think it certainly drew your attention away.
I think he would pull the hood of his cloak of elvenkind up over him, and he would listen for that bird and turn a little bit towards it. And now he's worried the horse is going to spook it. So he'll pat his horse and be like, you know, give him like, you know, wait. And he'll slink down and begin to creep towards where he hears the voice.
Roll a stealth for me.
All right. That is going to be a 15 plus 3 is 18.
The first few steps are a little difficult. You're moving through a level of muck. No one has taken the time to go back and put like wooden slats through the path or make sure there's stones or anything. This is worn down grass in the middle of wetland, more or less. But as you move, the cloak starts to take effect and your feet just start lifting more easily, landing more lightly. And you get over to the edge of the water and you pop up quietly. There is no bird, but you've managed to move quietly enough that you did not spook a small carp. I say small because carp can get fucking good size. That is a good meal, maybe two meal and a half, meal and some trail rations.
That works for me. Draw that bow back real carefully.
You watch this person move away, and when that cloak, for the record, hits his head, you're attuned a little bit, right? Like I said, the kami, we're going to say, are bordering into fey-ish. So there's a moment where it hits, the hood hits his head, and then there's like a link of kinship. You can feel that there's something fey going on there. And then he starts moving too well.
This might be my chance. I think I'm going to eat that horse. I'm going to eat that horse.
Give me a roll for horse eating.
What I would like to do is, if the horse is drinking water or just chewing on some grass, I'm going to try and grapple it and roll into the water.
I'm going to pull up the stats for a horse right now, because believe it or not, I did not come to this prepared to play a horse. And that's on me, 100%. Aram, we're going to say it's a draft horse, because...
That's sensible.
I don't think you're the sort of person who's traveling around with a full-blown bred war horse.
No one takes a war horse into the forest. That would just be foolish.
You're going to make an opposed grapple check. Can you beat a 12?
Her name is Feathermane.
I don't think that's going to matter in a minute or two.
Name's about to be lunch. That's a 13 plus strength, 16 total.
You beat it. But not by that much. So I want you to, while you grab this thing and roll into the water, give me a stealth roll at disadvantage.
Ooh, okay. Easy enough.
Beat it by 5 or more, I would have just given you the straight stealth roll.
That's a nat 1.
Yeah, no reason to roll a second one on that. Yeah. When you grab this thing and go to pull, it doesn't even start to neigh. It reflexively like lashes out and tries to kick you. So I want to know what you say that alerts the hunter. Because it's not the horse that gives the game away this time.
Part yelling, but also part pleading. Like, no, no, no. Ah, no, no, please. Just go in the water. Just in the water, please. Come on. This is going to be so... This was supposed to be good.
Just go to sleep. Just go to sleep.
What language is that in?
Ooh, I'm going to say it's a mix. I'll say mostly common, but you get some sylvan expletives.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Perfect.
Okay,
I was gonna say it's some sort of like sylvan pidgin common type situation.
Yeah, it's totally like my Armenian relatives, how they'll just talk to you in English, but as soon as they want to say something dirty, they get into low Armenian. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's just a lot of no. You were going to be so delicious. It was going to be so easy. Come on.
So I hear that.
And you turn around. Like, he still won the grapple check. So that horse is like on its side, half in the water. Like the head is just kicking out. And you can see the legs thrashing a little bit. And you can see this troll goblin thing.
Yeah.
Oh, this has gotten much more interesting.
Child size.
In the water. Just trying to negotiate as it tries to press the horse's head down.
You would think I'd have a fondness for my horses, and I really don't. I see them as tools, much like my bow. So while I'm upset that I'm losing some property, I'm not going to rush in and try and save it and put myself at risk. I'm going to creep up to where I can get a shot and cast Hunter's Mark on this troll.
Hunter's Mark doesn't have any sort of save to it, Dud.
No, it's just one bonus action, and I get to mark him. Pull back, and I'm going to take -5 to hit for +10 damage. Pull that back as far as I can.
Jesus Christ, you're going for...
And let go. That's a 20 minus 5 is 15.
What's the AC on a kappa?
It is 16.
Right by the side of your head.
It might have hit you, but you sort of got, for lack of a better word, elbowed by the horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whizzes past me, splashes in that, it just in the direction that I'm facing. Immediately turn my head in the direction it came from. And what do I see?
You're blended in fairly well, but at the same time, like you were trying to sneak against something you thought was ahead of you.
not to mention the fact that when you turn around and see this, I think there's got to be some level of like turn around, your horse is thrashing with this strange little, like, now that it's turned around and facing you, turtle goblin.
Yep.
I think your eyes would scan over that line of mm-hmm. trees. You'd go past me, then realize you just saw me because I'm kind of blended in with the bark. So you're like, wait a minute. Oh, wait, there he is. You see a human about 6'2", dark brown hair, big, thick beard, has a long bow raised and is already reaching for the next arrow on his back.
I've seen your types before. I'm not taking any chances. I'm going to misty step.
Kappa, where do you go?
I would love to sneak up on this person. They're the most fun to mess with.
There was almost like military precision to it. And if there's anything you know about the military types, it's that they're uptight as fuck, which means if you can break them, that's bonus points. Far side of the pond, basically just in a territory where you can come around the far side and you'll wind up behind him, especially if the way you're kind of expecting he starts creeping forward to investigate.
Running through my index of creatures, do I have any idea what this is?
Roll me a nature check.
14 plus 1 is 15.
In your Rolodex, there's a couple of things that sort of neighbor on this. Mostly the thing you're concerned about is it seems to do the crocodile thing, like it's going to try to drag you in the water and give you a death roll. But I think for the time being, this might be like out of your wheelhouse enough that you're not quite catching on.
Yeah, this is not a usual character that I would meet.
Playing off of the standard D&D, this would be, you know, out of the norm.
Right, then I'm going to whistle for my horse to get out of the river. Start turning in a slow circle and trying to see if I can spot this creature.
Kappa, the horse starts to right itself. And you can see the hunter go into hunty mode.
This is when they're the most focused. This is when the tension is most taut. I'm going to get as close as I possibly can. Get right up on him.
Then we're just going to give this straight up and down. This is an opposed check.
So my perception versus Kappa's stealth?
Yep.
My perception, 10 plus 5 is 15.
14 plus 2? 16?
That's by one. You go through the reeds and then underwater. And there's a point where you, like, specifically on your way past, spook like a turtle. Just enough that it, like, shifts weird and, like, makes some of the brambles move. And you use that to get between two ponds. And you get right up under this fucker's ass.
It's that thing where you get right up to behind me, and at the very last moment, I realize you're behind me, but it's too late.
I rip the foulest fart. I've always got one in the tank. It's ready to go.
I mean, a diet of like cucumbers and horses, you're going to have a couple in there.
Oh, yeah.
You go for it. It is long. It is, I mean, almost by definition, wet.
Sure.
It is just unpleasant.
I think he would kind of stumble backwards. He would like spin around and stumble backwards out of shock.
And you see just the most joyful expression on my face. And as you're off balance, I'm just going to tip you into the water.
Give me just a dex save at disadvantage. Kappa, just make an attack roll to give me a number to work off of.
12.
My dexterity save is 6 plus 6 is 12.
He comes over, just gives you a little push.
Whoa!
It's 12 to 12 here?
It's 12 to 12.
Then I'm going to say you trip. You go to fall backwards, and you just, like, one boot lands deep in the muck, like ankle deep in the water and then into the mud under that. And then you bump into the horse. That's what keeps you upright.
All right. Excellent.
Figure that gives you the success on the roll while also being mean to you, which is honestly what the goal was anyway.
And I am laughing. I am joyous. You see me just so pleased with myself. And I point at you and point at the horse. And yeah, it's just that was, I got you. That was great. Woo!
Certainly did. So now I see a laughing turtle man.
Yeah. And the moment it does, you recognize that, like, this thing isn't particularly big. Like, it's maybe decent sized kid.
I know what this is now. This is a turtle. Clearly, it's laughing. It's a turtle. I'm dealing with a particularly annoying turtle.
It looks like a young turtle.
Yeah, it's a turtle kid. It's just some kid. So I would like lower my bow and I would wrench my boot out, but my boot comes out. So now I got a bare foot slapping in the mud. Son of a bitch. Hey, kid, what's going on?
You just have a poopy boot right now. You have a poopy boot and that's what's going on. You're going to have to accept that. They're going to call you poopy boot for the rest of your life.
Slapping around, pissed as hell, shouting at what he thinks is a turtle teenager fucking with him.
Hey, are you gonna eat that? And I'll point over at the horse.
And he looks behind him, and he like looks at his saddlebag, and he's like, he like looks back at him. He's like, "What do you mean, the horse?"
Yeah, the clip clops.
What does a turtle want with a horse? And he's thinking, like, do turtles eat horses? Does he even know if turtles eat horses? Well, maybe they do. Like, why wouldn't they eat horses?
I'm going to give you the new role at advantage now because you've gained some information.
Okay.
And also, this close, you probably see that its head is... It's got a wrong head.
That is a natural 20. So a natural 20 plus 1 is 21.
But you've got this thing of like, what the fuck is with this weird little turtle kid? Because you've been like down a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like the only time you've seen it has been when you've been pushed and when you've been pulling your thing. And then you look at the thing and you look back at it and you kind of get back onto your full footing, stand up to your total height. And then you see that like, it's not that like it's got a weird sort of flathead. There is a divot. It's a cup of water. And that's when the word kappa comes to you.
And I've heard of these, but I've never seen one and never thought I would. Fascinating. Well, one more head for the wall. And he would crack his shoulders, raise the bow carefully. I'm afraid, my friend, that I will require the services of this horse for some time.
Oh, you're not gonna share?
There are very few ways to share a horse. None of which are advantageous to me.
I think at this point, I'm going to need you to roll for initiative.
Yes.
Okay.
7 plus 2, 9.
9 plus 3 is 12.
Appropriate, given that, you know, I don't think the kappa has quite figured out that he is in a combat situation yet. So, Kevin, it's your turn.
Ensnaring strike. And I'm going to fire another arrow at him.
When you were pushed backwards, like, you are standing basically immediately up against the kappa and your horse. Like, when we go into spacing,
okay.
I mean, like, it came in and pushed you, and you fell back a step.
Got you. Okay.
So, like, the spacing between you is decent, but that's because, like, if you actually imagine 5-foot spacing between people.
Right.
That's social distance, more or less.
Okay, then I want to put distance first. So I'm first going to move, which would invoke an attack of opportunity.
The way I'm picturing this is basically taking this as sort of a one-dimensional problem because you got like the path with the water on either side.
Yeah.
It's basically kappa, Kevin, horse, some path on either side.
He'd take a few steps back, probably sink his other boot deep into the mud. Then he'll take his shot.
That's going to require you getting back over the horse, basically.
Actually, I like that. I want to then, you know what? I'm going to flip over the horse's back so I'm behind it.
Oh.
And then I'll shoot from,
yes.
I'll shoot from behind the horse.
When he goes to pull this maneuver, it sort of clicks. Like, he's had a bit of a tone, and it feels mischievous, which is something you can bond with. But there's something wrong with it, and then you really clue in. Like, when he goes to roll backwards, you see, like, the arrow is fully drawn. You see the point on the arrow, and you realize, like, oh.
It's one of those mean practical jokes.
Do you want to take the attack of opportunity?
Yeah, I will do that. I'll just claw attack. I'm just trying and claw. Nope, that's a 3 on the die.
And you land in, like, it's spring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not the worst thing in the world, but this is not the weather where you want to be barefoot in a puddle.
No.
And you're not. You're, like, halfway up your foot in mud, and you can basically, like, resting your arm on the side of this horse, make your attack.
Ah. I am a ranger. I'm a forest person, but I like to be clean. I am rather upset right now. And so I pull the arrow back. I aim right for your chest, and I cast Ensnaring Strike, and I fire. And that's going to be a 14 plus 9 is 23.
That's going to hit.
The arrow strikes you straight in the chest. 10 points of damage as it slams into you. And then I need you to make a DC 13 strength save.
18 on the die.
It strikes you in the chest, and then a moment later, vines burst out from it, wrap all around you, but they're not thick enough, and you just rip right out of them.
That's not very nice.
In a little bit of panic now, like the hairs in the back of my neck raise, because I realize, oh, this is going to be a fight.
I'm going to give chase. I'm going to dive into this person and grapple them, hopefully, into the water.
You lunge over the horse. The horse does not take attacks of opportunity. It's a draft horse. It's mostly just confused. Aram, you can make your opposed grapple check. So you can use dexterity or acrobatics if you want.
I'm going to use dex, yeah. I'm definitely going to use dex. My roll is 3 plus 8 is 11.
I rolled a 19 and I have a plus 5.
That's going to beat mine considerably.
So the ability I have with Grappler, Kappas are really known well for the grappling ability. I can move at full speed, dragging a creature grappled. I'm going straight into the water. I have a speed of 30.
You can get him 20 feet into, like,
It is weird. I've got the physique of a child with a giant turtle shell. I should not be this strong, but the wiry arms just
terrifyingly strong.
It's your turn. You are in the water. You are currently grappled.
Drop the bow. Reach for the dagger. And I'm just going to stab twice. I'm not going to try and break free right now. I'm just trying to finish it. So the first one's going to be a 19 plus 6 is 25. The second one's going to be a 5 plus 6 is 11. So I only get one of them in. And then an extra D6 for the hunter's mark. So that is going to be 11 points of damage as I drive this, like, I drive it up right under your shell and kind of rip upwards.
Oh, okay. I do not like that. I've only felt one of those before. This person is really serious. It's no longer a game.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the thing I know works the best at calming a situation down. I'm going to go for that butt ball. I'm going to use my Shirikodama ability. I can only use this on a creature that is grappled. If a creature is reduced to 0 hit points this way, it dies. So I'm going to make the attack. 18 plus 5.
That hits.
So that's 3d6 plus 3 damage. 8, 9 plus 3, 12 points of bludgeoning damage as you feel one of my palms slam into just below your navel, around your center of gravity, and you feel something inside you start getting yanked.
Don't like that. Pull myself back in his grasp, plant a foot right on his chest or face and just try and push off him. So I'm going to try and break the grapple.
Okay. Same as before. make me the opposed grapple checks.
I got a 13.
Got a 2.
So I plant that foot right on your face and just push your neck back, which is enough to be able to slide out.
You get back. That is your action.
Yeah.
The thing is, your move speed in water, your swim speed is half your move speed.
Correct.
So you don't get out.
How far is it to the bank?
It's another 5 feet. You know that spot where you start debating whether you should, like, when you're swimming back to shore, you start debating whether you should be standing up yet? That's where you are.
All right, perfect.
Very much deep enough that drowning is an option, but also, like, if you got on your feet, you could get fully, more or less, out of the water.
Then that's my full action.
That's all you got, yeah. Kappa?
I don't give chase. Why would I go out there? I'm smarter than this. The game is over. So I'm just going to tread water. I tread water amazingly. And time out.
I'm now like just at the edge of the water with my knife. My long bow is floating behind you on the water. And you called a timeout. Without really an option here, I will pause. And I will just kind of, I'm not going to say anything, but I'll nod. And he's listening.
You can keep your Shirikodama, all right? You can keep that. That's yours.
I do not know what that is, but I nod.
But I still want that horse.
When he thinks about this creature, an idea comes to his head. What about this? And he opens up his hand, and three plump, delicious berries appear in it. Just the juiciest, ripest cherries you've ever seen. In D&D terms, I cast Goodberry.
I don't think I've ever... Would I have ever had the opportunity to see one of these berries?
No. I think a Goodberry is not actually, like, a tree berry. This is a magic... They're also divine magic.
Yeah.
So it's basically, like... the platonic ideal of what a berry should be. It's perfectly filling. It's perfectly sweet. It is round. It is the right color. It's red, but like a deep red that borders on purple. It's got a sheen to it. It's fucking lovely.
Here's the thing. My favorite food color is green.
Yeah.
So I'm interested. I've never seen this before. And so you've got me curious. What do they taste like? As I try, you can see me trying to get more detail. I'm slowly inching, like floating on over.
The cucumber is bitter. This is sweet.
Oh, but I love cucumbers. Best part of the cucumber is the bitterness.
If I had them, I would share. This is what I have. Think honeysuckle.
Never had that before. I know this game. Okay.
I do love the random decision of like, so this is a game now.
How about you give me the berries and a bite of your horse?
I look over at the horse and I'm like,
you can pick. You can pick what part.
He thinks about it for a moment and then slowly nods and takes another step forward and is like walking now deeper into the water to hand you the berries.
Okay. Okay. So I'll take the berries and then the horse and then you can go.
And he just nods and he moves a little bit closer.
And I'll wade a little bit up. And then as soon as I start hitting shallows, I'll rise up to my full height of, I guess, like 4'8". Really like inspecting the berries. Like I got my hands close to my chest, kind of like, ooh, these do look delectable.
I believe you'll enjoy them.
I'm starting to lean in and I'm going to.
And as soon as you get close, I drop them right in front of you.
I will go for it. And all the water spills out and I am paralyzed.
Yeah, you just lock in place almost like a statue. And I like just freeze for a moment. And I'm like looking right at you and waiting for you to move and waiting for you to attack.
I don't come back up.
I whistle for the horse. I take a couple steps back. Has he moved yet?
No.
Do I know what's happened?
You got a natural 20 once you finally clued in to the fact that this was a kappa. I think you do know exactly what's going on. And I think this whole hesitance is not like trying to figure anything out. I think this is a, that works?
Yeah, right. Like, holy shit, that actually works. Okay, call over his horse, gather up his bow, get a few steps back, look at him, and just kind of nod and then splash some water into his face.
I think it might even be like less the splash in the, because you got to refill the thing. Might just be plant a foot on the shoulder and just shove him back over.
Oh, okay, right. All right, so I'll just kind of walk up with the bow, right? And I'll just plant it on his shoulder and just shove him straight back and then kind of bounce backwards.
Underwater, the moment you're underwater, the head fills and you kind of come back up.
All right, okay. That's not that. You are sneaky. I'll give you that. You are a formidable foe.
So I've got like the horse behind me. The three good berries are kind of bobbing in the water in front. Right. I can cast it again. I cast it one more time, and I scatter three more as an offering. And I have a hand up, and I'm like, "Are we good?"
As one floats to me, I'm going to pop it in my mouth.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Yeah, we're good. These are good. I like these. Come back with more.
He'll nod. He'll slip the bow back onto his back, and he will bow.
And I will start to bow. And then
you almost got me there.
I think at that moment, they both share a laugh, like a real genuine laugh that kind of cuts through the tension a bit. And you know what? He will get on his horse, nod to this creature, ride into the nearest town and buy a bushel of cucumbers and then head right on back. Thank you for joining us for a DM deep dive into the Kappa. For more information about us, notes for each episode, and ways you can help support the show, head over to killeverymonster.com.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEM Podcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster. You can also listen to ad-free episodes and bonus content by subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. Our guest was Kappa. You can find him on Twitter at TheKappaChris. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.